I wanted to hop on before this episode started and give a quick trigger warning. This entire episode is about going no contact with abusive parents, so please be aware. We talk about religious trauma and abuse, going no contact, abusive parental relationships, purity culture, child abuse, high control religious abuse, sexual assault, and cult environments. If any of those topics are triggering for you, maybe skip this episode, but if not, I hope you guys enjoy it. Hannah's fantastic, and it's a really educational episode. Here we go. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be talking about going no contact in abusive relationships with Hannah Beck, which a lot of you may know her from TikTok. She started sharing her journey in 2020, which is where I found her. And if you listened to last week's episode, we did a deep dive into shiny, happy people, talked about a lot of religious abuse. And I felt like this would be a really good episode to have as a follow-up so that folks can get some information about going no contact, the steps for that, how to do it safely, and hear a little bit about Hannah's journey. But Hannah, do you want to give a little context on your background and kind of what started your, what made you start documenting it all on TikTok?
Yeah, of course. Hello, I'm Hannah. People may know me from TikTok. My handle is HannahAha424, is like the vibe. And I started TikTok in November of 2019, I think, kind of just like as a silly, goofy way to hang out with my friends. And through that process, I connected with a lot of people that had a similar upbringing as me. I grew up in a church called the Apostolic Christian Church of America, and it was a really fundamentalist religion. And yeah, just through TikTok and posting about my life, I discovered some people who had been in and out of the church, and they were like, hey, some stuff that you're talking about like sounds kind of like abuse, or sounds like you might be going through a hard time. So it's really interesting. Like, I discovered that the relationship that I had with my family and my church was unhealthy through the relationships that I had on TikTok, which I think is kind of a reversal of how a lot of people like start that journey. So I feel like I kind of shared my journey of growing up, leaving my family, going no contact, leaving religion. I was growing up alongside of a lot of other people doing the same thing.
That's so interesting. Was that bizarre to have random strangers on the internet inform you that you were experiencing abuse? Was that kind of like out of body experience a little bit?
At first, I was 18 and stupid, so not really, because I think I was just so young and like naive. The first video I posted that went viral was a video of me going into a Target and buying a tube top for the first time. And like the essence of that video was like, my parents would never let me buy this. I just got to college. I'm going to buy this and like go to a party. It's going to be so fun.
Yes. That was the video. That was the first video I saw of yours, was the tube top video.
Yeah. And in that one, I said that I was going to pay with quarters that I had saved up from tips from the job that I had. Because like my parents like tracked my money. And people in my comments were like, hey, they do what now? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, and I was fully in college. I was mostly supporting myself, and like all of my money that I made was like being funneled through my parents. So like, I didn't really have direct access to any of my money. And that was like the first hint that I had, I guess, from like myself and the internet that something was kind of maybe wrong. Like, I need to look into this further, I guess. So it was really bizarre to have such a little thing that seems so normal to me become kind of a bigger thing in the trajectory of my life.
Yeah. And is that something that I remember that video, and I think I probably commented on it and was like, hey, babe, this isn't okay. Are you good?
Are you okay?
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because I will talk about like things that I grew up in, things that I just kind of, I don't know, you accept a lot as normal when you don't have access to the outside world and you don't have access to other people's experiences. And there's a lot that you can kind of just accept as normal and think, oh yeah, no, there's no reason I would think this isn't normal. And that is something we've talked about on the podcast before, that I've had a lot of people try to shame me for that and be like, oh, you're such an idiot. Like, oh, you're so stupid. And it's like, no, I was a child and had no access to other information. So of course I thought this was normal. It'd be silly for me not to think it wasn't normal. That's not a me being stupid thing. That's a me being kept in a very abusive, tight little circle. And so it made, like, for me, when I saw it, I remember thinking not at all of like, oh, how foolish of like a, oh, her, she's been kept in like a bubble and she's stepping out of the bubble and might have no awareness that what she experienced in the bubble was bad. But I remember that video. Yeah. And I know that in the progression from that to, I don't remember when you talked about going no contact or like escaping, but I remember seeing a video with you about people talking to you and saying in the comments, okay, here's how to separate your finances. Here's how to da 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 da, and giving you like advice and tips on how to slowly start to take steps back and separate yourself. Where in between those time periods did you get from, huh, my parents not letting me buy a tube top and monitoring my finances is weird, to I need to get out of this. How do I fully do that without being like safely? How do I get out safely?
Yeah. So for some context, I'm going back a little bit. It's been a little bit over 2 years now since I have had any contact with my immediate family. So it hasn't been that long, really. I feel like I still feel fresh, in the no contact game. But basically, around that time that I was posting on TikTok, I was starting to like question my relationship with religion and just the religion I grew up with. I started out at a point right before I was going into college of like, the religion that I grew up in is not the concept of God that I want to have. Like, that was my starting point, was this religion has ideas about queer people that I don't necessarily agree with, and about women's rights and their bodies that I don't agree with. And just like, it seemed too legalistic for me. And that was all I knew. Like, I didn't explore outside of it because I was afraid. But my idea originally was like, something isn't right with this specific church, but like not necessarily with Christianity. So like, I just need to take a step back and reflect. And then when I got into college, actually, this was a little bit before I started TikTok, I took a class called like Family Systems in the United States. And one lecture that we had, it was like, something I'll never forget. We talked about the abuse cycle and what that looks like in families and in systems, and like in abusive relationships. And it talked about like love bombing, like making someone feel great about themselves, telling them they're amazing, that like they could do no wrong. And then like this waiting period of like anxiety and stress and like walking on eggshells until the explosion, which is like something awful, horrible happens, like physical, whatever type of abuse you experience, and then back to that love bombing phase. And I was like, holy shit, this looks familiar. And yeah. I just recognized that that abuse cycle I had seen was like my life. Like that was how I was experiencing every day. And then when I started posting online, I kind of like connected my experience with my parents growing up with religion. Like those two things, I think, were pretty related, just like the abuse that I experienced in the church and with my parents. And then it took a long time to come to terms with the fact that like I had abusive parents. That's something that's not easy to do, because I think that like, yeah, biologically we're kind of wired to want our parents' approval and to want like that support from your parents, obviously, like as a survival mechanism, literally. And just like, it's okay to want people to love you. And I did, because I was a kid. And then once I kind of came to terms with the fact that like I was in an abuse cycle, I think the decision to leave was really easy. And I know that's weird to say, like the process of leaving was hard and coming to terms with the fact that I was abused was hard. But realizing that like, once I realized that I wasn't safe, and once I realized that I couldn't grow or develop as a person in an abusive environment, I was like, I have to leave. Like, it just made sense. It was like the only thing I could do for myself was get out, you know? So then I was diagnosed with PTSD, which was like the catalyst, I think, to make all sense of that. Was going to a therapist and she like diagnosed with PTSD, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm just depressed. And she's like, actually, this is like traumatic. And I was like, I can't really have post-traumatic stress disorder from nothing. So I'm probably not making this up in my head. So then I decided that it was a problem. I needed to get out. And then it was like a quick turnaround from that point when I realized that I needed to get out. So at that time, it was, unfortunately, we went home for COVID, like during the time that I realized I needed to separate myself from my parents. So like, I had just discovered like, these people are abusive. The church I grew up in was abusive. And then I need to get out. And then immediately I was like, had no place to go, so I had to go back to my family home.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I didn't even think about.
Which was crazy. I know. So there was a waiting period, a little bit. So I ended up going to college in the town that I grew up in. So my way out, I guess, was transferring schools. So I applied to transfer to a different university. I ended up getting a great scholarship, so I didn't have to pay a ton of money to go. And then I had family, friends that I consider family now, I guess, found family, that just like carried me through that experience. Cause it's just so emotional and hard. Like I had no money, I had no stuff. So it was just the people on TikTok that were watching me were supporting me so much. And then also just my immediate like found family, like literally are the reason why I was able to get out. But yeah,
that's it was wild. Tough. I remember when COVID first started, people posting on Facebook, does anyone realize that the folks that are in abusive homes and relationships now can't get out of their homes? And now we're stuck in a 24/7 cycle with their abusers. And I remember reading that and thinking like, oh, fuck, I hadn't thought of that. And even my experience with COVID, a lot of folks that were in college, because you're 22.
I'm 22. Yeah, I just graduated.
Okay, so I'm 24. We were in college at the same time. Like it was my senior year of college in 2020. And I was at the end, like portion of my deconstruction, was like ready to piece the fuck out of Christianity, was like really over it, and ended up having to go home for 2020 as well and be back in a very religious household that I wasn't expecting to be in and have to be like very involved in religion at home. And I hadn't told my parents I wanted to leave religion yet. They didn't know that was a thing. So like we're trying to do like live stream church and I'm like, this is triggering. Like I don't want to be involved in this. Absolutely. And it was interesting to see how many folks had like a really awful experience, but I can't imagine having the mindset of like, no, I want to get out, and then having no choice but to stay for like at least a little bit. And can I ask, were both of your universities public? Were they religious universities or were they non-religious universities?
I did not go to a religious university, and I am so grateful for that. Like, yeah, I think it would have made it a lot more difficult to make the decision that I did.
But I was also just thinking, that's fantastic. Well,
it's in my brain. I think we've kind of all heard the phrase, like if you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out, and then you put it in lukewarm water and increase the temperature, it won't jump out, like and that it's already dead by the time it gets to boiling. In the case of COVID, I feel like the water was boiling. I couldn't jump out. And it was just so hard mentally for me and other victims of abuse to like be in that position where I'm like, okay, I know that this is like, I'm aware that the water is boiling. I know that it's not okay. And I can't do anything about it. And it was just such a dark time, I think, for myself and a lot of people to feel so trapped in something that was so scary.
Yeah. And especially having it where it's such a unique experience. And because COVID had never happened in our lifetime, there also wasn't really any type of guidelines or, you know, like, hey guys, like this is how you get through this type of a situation. Everyone really was like the guinea pigs going through the situation. And so there's not a lot of resources to help you process through that, of knowing that you're in an environment that is super unsafe, and not just having like your family tell you you can't leave, but having the government be like, no, you actually have to stay at home. And you're like, okay, you no worries. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very like unique situation that hadn't really been a situation that anyone had experienced in our cycle of history. And so the people that were alive hadn't ever been through it before. So there wasn't really a lot of resources. And even before that, when there were other like really significant pandemics, there weren't like studies of abuse that were having like writing books about like, hey, if you're in an abusive household and you hit a pandemic, like here's what to do. That didn't exist. Okay. Well, I have a follow-up question. So if you started to unpack the aspects of your family household and then also started to unpack like, okay, I don't really align with this religiously. Did you do the whole like stepping out into progressive Christianity for a sec?
I tried to. My freshman year of college was like progressive Christian, non-denominational, like churches and worship groups was where I started.
Okay. And then where are you at now? Do you consider yourself a religious person?
I do not subscribe to any organized religion right now. I think the best way to like describe my religion or like spirituality is just like I 100% believe that like there is a higher power that's like connecting people, whether that be like love or a god or whatever. I think it's a really beautiful thing that like people are connected by something bigger than themselves. And I just think that everyone should be nice to each other. And I think that's, those are the things I've gathered, in my own personal spiritual journey. But I think that like spiritual practice is still important, but I don't subscribe to an organized religion.
Okay. Fair enough. We had a similar pipeline. Like you and I have very similar experiences in that. I did the same thing. It was like very fundamentalist. And then I was like progressive, non-denominational, like, I'm going to go to a church that believes that creation isn't real and like subscribes to evolution. And then it was like, okay, like loved that. But like, I'm just really over all of it as a whole. And I just dipped out entirely because it was too much.
I think I grew up with like such an intimate knowledge of the Bible. If you grow up in a fundamentalist Christian church, so then going to a progressive church after that and like, knowing the fullness of the scripture, it was really hard for me to separate. Like I was like, well, I can't ignore these things that I know are in, like, I used to try to like excuse a lot of things, I guess. And I'm not saying that people can't be Christian or they shouldn't be Christian or whatever. But I guess I had a really hard time with thinking that like my fundamentalist Christianity was the problem. And I wanted to hold on to Christianity so bad. Cause I was like, this thing is good. Cause like the community I had within Christianity was so good. But then like having that really intimate knowledge of the Bible made that difficult. Cause I was like, well, what about when the Bible says this and this and this exactly? it was really hard to hold those two things at once.
No, I think that's understandable. I think the other thing about progressive Christianity is that it relies a lot on the doctrine of interpretation, like the idea that you can interpret the Bible in different ways. And I think for folks who grew up in fundamentalist Christianity, that can be really hard to wrap your brain around. And I don't have an opinion on whether or not that's correct or incorrect, because like I didn't write the Bible. I don't know Jesus. I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if any of it's real. I don't know if you can interpret it or you can't, or if it was supposed to be written, like read as it is on the paper. That's what they meant. I have no idea. But going from the fundamentalist, like, this is right, this is wrong, there is no gray. And then in my opinion, progressive Christianity is incredibly nuanced and incredibly like gray. You're just sitting in the gray all the time. And when you go from the black and white for, you know, 20 years or whatever in your childhood and having that drilled into you, and then you try to hop over to like, it's up to interpretation. My brain short circuited. I was just like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, where are the facts? I don't understand. And so I think that it can be really difficult. And a lot of the folks that I know that have found a space in progressive Christianity grew up in religious environments, but didn't necessarily grow up in fundamentalist childhoods. And I think that is a little bit of a difference. And if people are able to transition from a fundamentalist childhood to progressive Christianity as an adult, props to you, because that's a difficult thing to do. But I think that a lot of the folks that I know that have found their home in progressive Christianity grew up in Christianity, but they didn't grow up in fundamentalist childhoods. And so that was part of the difference was or they're just folks who do well with nuance in general. Like some people are just people who do well with nuance and who do well with, you know, playing the devil's advocate and kind of walking in the gray. And I am a neurodivergent person with severe OCD. Doing the whole nuance thing has never been my vibe. And so progressive Christianity, I tried to hold on to it for a while. And I think the only reason why I didn't jump out immediately was because I was going through, the podcast knows this, but I was going through an assault investigation while I was processing, do I leave Christianity? Wow. And I desperately needed something to be like, there's a reason for this. Like, this will be made beautiful, because it was so incredibly draining that I needed some little fleck of hope to hang on to. And I think that's the only reason I didn't just entirely jump out of Christianity, was I needed something to just make it all make a little bit more sense. And then once I got stable enough in my trauma healing, that was when I was like, I actually don't really need Christianity anymore as my like crutch to try to help me process this trauma. Okay. I can process this trauma without religion.
Wow. I am thinking a lot about my own life now after you said that. because my
trauma healing on the podcast.
Absolutely. This is just therapy. But after, yeah, I also experienced sexual assault in my freshman year of college, and a lot of this,
no way,
religion, and like I had a very similar process of like, if I don't know what this means, then like I'm gonna lose it. Like it's just so hard to process something so traumatic happening, especially growing up in a fundamentalist religion where like sex is like I don't know, your purity is like your greatest possession as a woman. It is so hard to process that and think that like if you go and question fundamentalism, you have to question like, what if this was for nothing? And that just makes you like lose your mind. Like, oh my God.
Yep. And so I mean,
to,
I like
decide to question it at the same time as that was happening. So I totally understand that.
Yeah, no. And I think it's super common. And the other thing that's really interesting is I have found in this, I don't have any statistics to back this part of it up, but I know that a lot of folks that I've talked to kind of start their deconstruction journey in their freshman, sophomore year of college because they get out of their family households. They're able to have some distance. They start learning about
community.
Yeah. They start learning about like the world, because a lot of prereq classes are, you know, more worldly, more secular, have a more like zoomed out lens, even if that is taking like freshman psychology or if it's taking freshman political science or whatever, like taking a prereq that gives you a little bit of a zoomed out lens that isn't your little zoomed in circle of Christianity. And then from a, this is statistically supported, freshmen in college, freshman girls in college are the most likely to experience sexual assault, in August to November of their freshman year. It's like the first little chunk of college where you walk in, you're kind of disoriented. If you come from a fundamentalist Christian environment, you have way too much freedom. You don't know what to do with it. It can get really overwhelming. For me, I was assaulted by a partner. Like I started dating someone in college immediately because I had the freedom to date and wasn't taught how to date safely, wasn't taught about consent. And then very quickly got into a incredibly abusive relationship with this person and was assaulted over and over again over the span of 2 months. And it's a really common experience, especially for people who come out of really high control religions, because you don't have, we did a whole episode on like the pipeline from purity culture to like abusive adult relationships, because there's a straight line of growing up in an environment where you're taught that men have power over you. You grow up in an environment where you don't know that you have bodily autonomy. You don't know what consent is. You don't know what your fucking vulva is. Like there's so little education.
Yeah, the power structures are so similar.
Yeah. And then you hop into that and then you can meet one person and they immediately instill or, administer control over you and try to act like they have the authority. And that's normal. That's comfy. That's safe. That feels like home. And so red flags don't go off. And next thing you know, there are things within sexual relationships where you don't know how to explain consent. And then you're now down this rabbit hole. And it can spiral so fucking fast. And I've talked to so many women that have very similar experiences. And for me in college, it was like, I went to a Christian college. So Christianity was everywhere around me. And for one, my sexual assault investigation was at a Christian college. So it was inundated with purity culture.
Oh my God.
The investigation itself was like rooted in purity culture. There was some really sketchy ethical shit that went down in the investigation because of the purity culture doctrine that was like really mixed in. And then I was surrounded by Christianity and it was like, I can't afford to let go. And it was actually the same thing with my family. I had some things with my family that I wanted to set boundaries and talk to them and say, hey, I'm realizing that this stuff in my childhood was abusive. I want to talk to you about it. But because I was going through the assault and trying to process that trauma, I couldn't afford like upsetting them. I didn't want to upset them and then lose them by accident. And I didn't want to separate myself from religion and then lose that sense of support and go through the loss of a community. It was like, I can't afford to do any of that. I'm trying to just survive and figure out how to get to the next day with this trauma. And then once I got into a space where I felt more stable, I felt like I had a good resources with trauma, I was able to like enter a support group for sexual assault and get therapy support there. I was able to find support outside of religious circles. And like my family and I had gotten to a place where I was able to talk to them about the fact that they were abusive to me in my childhood. And there were some serious like changes made and some demands made on me and my siblings' side of like, here's what you guys need to do in order to continue to be in our lives. And they were very receptive to that. And then it was like, okay, I'm stable enough. I have 2 feet on the ground. I feel like I actually have my footing again. I think I can let go of religion. I don't think I need it anymore.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like if you grow up with a worldview that is similar in narcissistic family structures and in fundamentalist religion, that without this individual group, which you were talking about shiny, happy people at the beginning of this. And I think that what's interesting about that is that like, and in fundamentalist religion is that the like cult or the group dynamics exist in your individual family unit and they exist in the religion as a whole. And it's so wild to navigate the dynamics and the socialization of both of those groups at the same time, because they don't always line up exactly. And it's just, it's crazy. But if you grow up thinking that outside of this group, which is both your family unit and your church group, that you are nothing, like that's what you're taught, like without these people, you don't deserve anything, you're not good enough, like you don't deserve love. And then it would be so hard to process traumas and changes to your personal faith and sexuality and like any big personal realizations that you're having. Because if you go out to question anything, you think that you're nothing. Like you're taught to treat yourself like a piece of shit without the church and without your family. It's so sad.
Which also, like, let's acknowledge how genius that is from a marketing perspective. I always like to look at, I'm in marketing. That's like that's what my career is in. And I always look at things specifically religion and cults where it's like, that's so fucking genius.
You're like,
that's
such a business genius degree, because they really,
yes, exactly. Cause it's really
they
smart.
Aim at that. Yeah.
Yes. It's very, very smart to like tell people that you are absolute dirt if you're not involved in this religion. Without God, you're useless. That's a perfect storm. And then you add the hell doctrine into that. And you're like, also, if you leave, you spend eternity in hell. That's a very perfect like equation to keep people scared enough to stay in. And I think the other thing that's interesting is, in my personal opinion, fundamentalist Christianity is not a hospitable environment for trauma healing. And I think that when people start doing trauma work, they can like, I think a lot of people can twist it and contort it to make it a tiny bit hospitable for only a short amount of time. And I've noticed that like most people that I know that are really in fundamentalist Christianity and start to trauma heal, they leave because it's not a hospitable environment. And the two things are pretty contradictory to one another. And that's in, I mean, there's so many reasons for that, but no, I think that there are a few things that like make it not hospitable. I think one of them being that there's the doctrine that a lot of Christian environments practice of everything is used for good and God will make everything beautiful. And so that eliminates the space to grieve and to process. You're not allowed to sit in the hurt and process and be real with that. And then there's also
not
the idea that
that's like super fucking like ableist and concerning, like all of that doctrine of like God will like make it better for good, even though like, oh my God, I'm just gonna need to process that for a minute. It just makes
Christianity
me so mad,
is
like that idea.
Super duper ableist, and that's a conversation that I don't see on the internet very often. I just did a post about how the prosperity gospel is ableist because I was like, why don't we talk about this enough?
Absolutely.
Guys, like telling someone that their faith helps
like,
them get their health
things good. But what if it doesn't? But what if you can't? Like, And I think there's just so much cognitive dissonance, because if you believe that, like, it's so hard to I'm sorry, I'm trying to think about what I'm trying to say. But like, yeah, it's to be a Christian and to believe that like God will give you good health. It's like so easy to ignore when disabled people and disabled activists are talking about the issues that they're having. Like it's, that's people turn to like blaming those people, kind of like fundamental attribution error. You're like, that person did that thing because of like some sort of moral failing that they had. And it's just like so messed up, but
it's also so awkward
because if you question it for a second, like, hey, maybe God didn't do that for like, maybe it wasn't because of this person's moral failings that they're disabled. Then you start having to question the entire religion you grew up in. And it's like, it's a cycle and it's horrible.
Yeah. Bad and it's also super, super awkward when, especially there's a few mega churches that have preached really intensive, prosperity gospel or health and wealth gospel. What there's multiple names for it. And I don't remember the name. It might be Bethel that I'm thinking of. There's one mega church specifically that the wife of the head pastor came down with like stage 4 cancer. And that's a real awkward thing to be confronted with when your entire theology is based on the idea that if you have faith, you're not going to get sick. It's a little awkward when then like the head pastor's wife is like super sick.
And so emotionally difficult for her to like process that. It must be awful for her being like the head figure wife, like the first lady of this church, processing that she has been part of a doctrine that is taught that like your actions get you health and wealth and wellness, and to like be suffering through that would be so traumatic and something that she should never have had to go through. It's just insane.
Yeah, and that like I just looked it up.
Bring people up in that way.
I just looked it up, and she died. She died from cancer. God. Which like that's the thing that's so crazy to me too, is like if there is a continuous preaching, Bethel Church is a huge fan and proponent of this prosperity gospel. They are super into it. And they have done so many sermons about like raising folks from the dead and healing people. And that if you have enough faith, like they teach in their seminary, it's not actually seminary, it's a school of supernatural ministry, which is hilarious. They teach folks to go out and heal random people on the street. Like that is a big part of their teaching, is to go out and just like approach a Dairy Queen cashier and be like, hey, are you limping? Can I pray over you? If you have enough faith, it'll be healed right now. It's very like weird and mystical. And I've talked about the fact that like, then you see his wife pass away, and it's a weird, like, okay, you're going to stick to your theology? Are you going to stick to the whole, she didn't have enough faith, or are we going to pivot? Because it's pretty awkward if you stick to your theology. And it's also pretty awkward if you pivot, because then it's a, oh, it applies to everyone except for us. And that's a really, like, it's a very common thing in that type of theology and doctrine too, where it's just like, oh yeah, we're going to be super hard on this. And like, if anything bad happens to you, it's because of your faith, until something bad happens to the folks who are preaching it. And then they're like, oh, except for us. That did not apply to us. That was just a joke. but yeah, that's just an interesting example. That, and it's even more interesting that it happened in such an incredibly aggressive prosperity gospel church. Like, it's just such an interesting like case study kind of thing that it blows my brain apart. Okay. I also wanted to get into, for folks who we've brushed over the no contact stuff a tiny bit, but I wanted to give a little bit of context for listeners who either are unaware of what no contact means, or are interested in going no contact and have had obstacles or are terrified or whatever, which is all very fair. Do you want to share a little bit about what no contact means, what it looks like, and then any like tips or steps to move forward from that?
Yeah, of course. So no contact can mean like different things to different people. For me being no contact with my parents means that like I have not reached out to them to talk about anything in, it's been like 2 years, as I said in the beginning of the pod. But yeah, just like not having communication with a person or persons for any reason. And for me, I'm going to go back a little bit to the decision-making process, because I think what helped me kind of make the decision to go no contact was, I guess just the idea that I couldn't heal from my post-traumatic stress disorder while I was still being like actively traumatized. Like you can't get better from PTSD if the T is still happening. Basically I decided like if I ever want to have a relationship with my parents or my immediate family, I need space. And so that was like the little foot in the door that I got of like, I need to take steps to make myself better, like to heal myself as a person. And I guess the biggest piece of advice I have for going no contact is that there are no rules for going no contact. I think that at least in my church growing up, there was this idea of like, people always say that they wish there was a rule book for this stuff. And there is, it's called the Bible. And it was like old men saying that like everything had a set of rules and there was an exact way to do everything because we have the Bible. And then thinking about that through a non-Christian lens is really fascinating now, because now I know that there aren't sets of rules for literally anything of like how you do anything in your life. But like parents aren't supposed to abuse their kids. Churches aren't supposed to abuse their members. And there are no rules for how to cut yourself off from those abusive dynamics. And that is the best advice I've learned, is that if you get really sad one day and you're like, I really want to reach out to my mom and tell her what she did and how it hurt me, you can do like, you can do that. You can send an email if you need to. You can talk to your therapist about it. You can like, you can share as much or as little as you want with anyone. You like can angry call people and scream and tell them that they're a piece of shit if you really want to. Like there's no rules. What happened to you wasn't supposed to happen. So like whatever is, I don't know, whatever you feel like will benefit your healing the most is probably okay. And that was just, that was the most helpful advice I got from my therapist. Thank you, Queen.
I like that though, because I do think in fundamentalist Christianity, there's a lot of rules and there's a lot of very strict rules that don't have a lot of sway or bend to them. It's very, once again, very black or white. And I have experience with going no contact with extended family members. And one of the things that I found really helpful was the experience was really traumatic for me to talk about in a non-therapeutic environment. And so I made a rule for myself that I was only going to talk about it within therapy. And then I broke that rule and I ended up talking about it like with my partner and with my mom. But I dealt with it primarily in therapy. And one of the ways that I found really helpful was I didn't give my, I purposely have refrained from giving my new address to that extended family. Like when I sent them a letter, I put my parents' address as their return address so that my address wasn't made public. And then I ended up doing letters and not texts or emails. Like I just did full blown, like typed out letters of explaining why I was going no contact and like what led to that decision. And at the beginning, there wasn't really a set, it wasn't like I'm going no contact with you forever. It was a, I need time to process this and I don't know how long that's going to take or if I'm going to be okay enough to be involved with you guys anymore. I'm not really sure. And then, it's been like a year for me. And like a year later, I like sent another letter that was like, hello, like, thank you for your patience. I am still processing
A corporate email.
Yes, exactly. And I was just like, I am still processing this. Like, if you guys want to respond, you can, but like, I still don't know where I'm going to be with this. And, you also don't have to give people any reason as to why you're going no contact. I know for me, it wasn't something, it's a weird thing to explain without giving context, which I will not be giving, but it was a thing that kind of came out of left field. And so I felt like I needed to give context out of respect and out of, honestly, just so that people knew why I stopped talking to them, because it wasn't obvious, I don't think. And, but I also know folks who have just like blocked their ex-partner or their, a friend or a family member or a parent and just been like, nope, fuck you. Like, I'm just not talking to you. I'm not, there will be no explanation. You're cut off, period. And that's that.
All right. For those of you who've been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scouts Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting!
I realize I didn't tell the story of me going no contact. I feel like,
oh my God, yes, okay, please do. Yeah.
So like officially what happened was, I said the catalyst was like me transferring to the University of Illinois. And that was a great decision. I like had an apartment lined up. I had a job, like was planning on living in a different city. And I had, it was like a few days after my birthday was the date that I was going to move out. Like I had planned to have a friend come down with a truck and help me move all my stuff out and like go to a new place. And I had not told anyone anything. So I remember like sitting at my birthday, like we had like family dinners for our birthdays. So it was like I think it was my 19th birthday. Sitting there and being like, is this the last time like they're going to sing me happy birthday? Like very trippy, weird, like me knowing that I'm leaving in 2 days and not talking to you again. Was bizarre. But anyways, after that, I made sure that I had no like ties to them financially or in any way. So like I made sure I had my own insurance. I had my own phone plan. I had enough money to like pay for my first month or couple months of rent or whatever.
Did that set them off though? Like, did they figure out at any point that you were slowly separating yourself financially, or did they not catch on?
Created a great liar. And I think that's something that fundamentalist parents can do, is make wonderful liars. And that's what I did. So this is like, oh my God, stop. Okay. So this is like, I guess a helpful thing that might help some people is,
yeah, no,
when you work, you can like split your, you can fill out a form that says exactly what percent of your paycheck goes into a bank account. So like my bank account, it was set up that like 100% of my paycheck from my barista job would be put into the bank account that my parents had control over. So then I filled out a new form and I had it set up like 80-20. So like 80% of the money will go into that bank account. And then I opened a new one and then 20% of every paycheck went into that account. But I started working more. So then like the paychecks would look the same, but then 20% of every paycheck was still going into like a new bank account that they didn't know about. So I was like starting to build up money in a separate account. And that was really, really helpful because I didn't want to like tip them off or anything that like,
so what happened to that money that was in their account? Did that money just, you've never seen that money again?
No, actually I was able to. So like the day that I don't know, I feel like not everybody has one that's like dramatic, but I had like a day that I had to do everything on because I knew that I couldn't tip them off before or else like they would freak out and it would be bad.
And so were they out of town that day, or how did you go about getting the day, a full day, to just like pile everything on?
So at this point I was, in their eyes, I was going to a church on my campus and I knew they were at church, I think is what happened. Or they might have been at work, but like I knew they were out of the house. Like they were not in town.
Okay.
Or they were not at the house. So I in the morning went to the bank that my family had their bank account at. And it was like one of those like kid accounts where I was 18, but still like they owned the account and my name was on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to like fill out a cashier's check, I think, and like bring ID and be able to transfer that money from that account to my own. But like they have bank notifications on their phone. So I knew like as soon as I transfer this money, like it's done. Like they're going to try to contact me or whatever. So Yeah. So I go to the bank, get my cashier's check, like transfer the
money. Did you do that? Did you do that last?
Account. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I did the wrong order. We wake up in the
morning. No, that's okay. Yeah. Give us the day.
My friend has a truck. Yeah. This is the day. Get some breakfast because it's going to be a big day. McDonald's breakfast sandwich. Just kidding. Okay. We get the truck. Go to my childhood home and I drop off my garage door opener that I had to like get in the house, like my house key. I dropped off my phone. Like they had purchased my phone and I didn't want there to be any reason why like they would have to, they could like say that I stole it or like have any legal issues with anything that like they bought for me. So I just like had a pile of stuff. Like I'm giving you back my phone. I'm giving you the garage or door opener, took my stuff, took a letter that said like, hey, I don't even remember what it said. It was like three sentences. It wasn't very good. It was just like, I need some time. Gotta go. And then I left, did the thing with the bank. And then once that was done, riding off into the sunset, Tangled soundtrack in the background, she was free.
That is so fucking crazy. Also, you're a hilarious storyteller.
Like, thank you.
You're
so
such
much.
A good storyteller. You're so interesting to listen to. That's so wild. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Enough with Jennifer Lopez, but it's giving the same vibes.
Okay. I feel that.
Which also be that's not a suggestion that you should watch it because it might be triggering as hell, but
no, it definitely felt like a movie moment for sure.
From what I've heard from folks that are escaping abusive environments is that it takes so much more planning than anybody ever thinks about, especially from a familial environment or from a spouse, because a lot of the times there's a lot of financial entanglement and there's a lot of, you know, if it's a spouse, maybe both of your names are on multiple things, or maybe, you know, there's a lot of crossover. And if it's a parent and you're, you know, 18, 19, and you're just coming out of being a minor, a lot of the times they still have a lot of control over a lot of shit. And so absolutely. The planning is a huge thing. Can I ask how you handled or still handle, I guess, because you started documenting it on TikTok. Did you start documenting it? Well, you said, yeah. So you started documenting it before you officially left, right?
Yeah.
So how did that work? Like, were you terrified that they were going to find your TikTok?
So I had parents that were not super tech savvy. So like I was stupid at the time, but I did not think that they were going to find it. Like that was not a concern of mine. And especially because the church that we went to was very anti-social media. I was like, I don't think anyone from my church is going to see this because like nobody from my church is allowed to use TikTok. You know, like
Did it scare you more? Like when it went semi-viral, did that scare you way more when it was like, oh shit, now a lot of people are seeing this?
Honestly, no, because I didn't understand the implications of abuse dynamics. Like when I would talk about, like the first video that went viral was the tube top video and I was so excited about it. And I didn't understand like my parents controlling what I wear when I'm a 19-year-old girl and also like me having to carry quarters so then I can buy things without their permission. Like I didn't realize that was bad or like that would like make them look bad. So I didn't think there was anything to be concerned about initially, like at all. And then as I started learning more about abuse dynamics and about the relationship, I guess, with my parents, I realized like they might not like this very much. And it turned out that someone that I went to church with, her daughter saw my TikTok, I think, like on Instagram. I don't even think they had Reels at the time. No, I think she just saw my TikTok. And then she came up to my mom at church and was like, hey, just want to let you know I'm praying for your daughter because she's clearly going through a really hard time right now.
And was this, and then, you were still in the house at this time?
I was at school at this time that they found out. Okay. I think it was after COVID. There was a period where I had to go home for COVID and then I was back in school. And then I don't know. It was like we were back and forth, but anyways, it was after, like I was not living at home at the time. I remember being in my dorm and getting a call from my dad. And I don't know why, like, but I knew when I got that phone call that they knew that they found my TikTok. Like they called me often, but like that day, for some reason, I was like, damn, like they know. So I went through and deleted. I had privated a bunch of my TikToks. I privated one when I showed my tattoo because they didn't know I had a tattoo. And that was like my biggest concern was the tattoo. And then they went through and watched, I think, all of my TikToks. My mother said that they made her want to throw up, so she couldn't watch them. But I think my dad watched all of them. And they showed up in my dorm, unannounced, and I had to kick my roommate out because my parents were there and wanted to talk immediately. And it was, yeah, actually, I'm just going to get into this because might as well. I posted a TikTok about it because I was stupid. And I was like, yeah, let's just, might as well bring more attention to this horrible moment. Because that's how I like expressed all of my feelings. And I was like, I guess it's not going to make it any worse. So I just kept posting about it. But anyways, they came to my dorm unannounced, like talking about all the TikToks that I'd posted about them and our religion and like my abusive mother. Like, that's heavy to have someone just show up and talk about all that shit. And the thing that was shitty that I still think about is, if you've seen my TikToks, like, you know, that's what I talk about, is like religious trauma and abusive parents. Like I was, I think as an 18-year-old, like crying for help. Like, I am not okay. Like, this is what I've been through and it sucks. And their response was, I don't think you should be cursing online because it's not very Christian. And I don't think you're going to be able to find a job. Is because like one of the audios I used had like curse words in it. Like, do you remember the, this is for Rachel? And then like that, like phone call,
you big fat, ugly, nasty bitch.
That was, I did one of those. That was what they like centered their attention on, was that video. And they're like, you're not going to be able to find a job and you're going to get kicked out of school because of that video had you cursing in it. And like, it was like this cognitive dissonance where I guess they like couldn't process, because it was heavy, like to realize that your daughter had just had hundreds of thousands of people online watching her life and that she thinks that you were abusive to her. Like, that's a lot to process.
Yeah, no kidding.
We didn't really talk about religion that much. We just talked about like why I shouldn't be cursing online and why I probably shouldn't be wearing clothes that are like tube tops. Like, their takeaway from my expression of how much pain I was in was, oh my god, why are you swearing, instead of like, oh my god, my daughter is suffering. And that was so hard to process, just like realizing how, I guess, like emotionally stunted a lot of fundamentalist Christianity like makes you, like that your biggest concern is how this looks to other people because I'm cursing, and not like
the pain my daughter thinks my daughter is this hurt by us, that, and this hurt that she feels that she needs to go and talk about it with strangers on the internet. Cause that's like a whole other aspect of like, that's how hurt she is. And that's how unsafe she feels with us, that the internet, which is notoriously a scary place, is a safer environment for her to talk about this than with her actual parents. And you'd think that that would be the takeaway. Have they found or tried to contact you through TikTok or through anything else since you left?
Since I left, the first year I got an email about once a month from them that was just like, kind of felt like a newsletter, like an update about what was going on in their lives. And then like,
cool.
Just like, I don't know, like we went on vacation. Here's a picture of the dog. Like, I don't know, just like, it was very weird and informal. And in the beginning there was almost like no acknowledgement that I left, because I think to them, I was like, that's Hannah. Like, that's, she's unstable. She's crazy. So like, they were just kind of like letting me have my moment. And then they were going to
like a midlife crisis, like, or something.
They just like thought I would, they thought like, she's being dramatic. She's, the devil's got her, but she's going to come back. And so like, there was very little acknowledgement of it. And then I think it kind of became real at the 1 year mark. And I had posted a video, I think like kind of commemorating my 1 year and the progress that I had made. And I talked about, someone asked me, like, what do you need from them to, like, contact them again? And I was like, first of all, I need, like, personal healing for myself. Like, I want to be in therapy for a lot longer. And also some sort of, like, acknowledgement, or at least, like, apology, or, like, at the very least, an acknowledgement that, like, the way that you were treated was not okay. And that, like, we were abusive towards you. Just, like, some acknowledgement that what happened in my childhood was not okay. And I posted that. And then I shortly after got an email from them basically saying, like, we saw that and we didn't do anything wrong. You will not be getting an apology. And that was like, I think over a year ago at this point. And that was the last I have heard from them, unfortunately.
So they had eyes on the TikTok for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yikes.
I'm not sure about now, because again, I haven't heard from them, but yeah. It's tough. It's not ideal. But it's ideal for me at this point in my life, at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing that I will, with my experience with no contact, because it's been a very recent journey for me, it was a year in February, it's very odd.
It's fresh.
And I think a lot of folks expect it. I've seen people on the internet criticize other people for going no contact, especially with family members, because it's like, well, they're your blood. Like, you're going to want your mom one day. Like, what about when they get old? And it's like, there is a very unhealthy expectation of children and grandchildren and even siblings to take care of family members and put their own mental health and safety and happiness, because your happiness can also be a priority and should be a priority, and put the family relationship above those things. And there's an expectation to just like ignore that it's harming you, and that this like blood tie is like thicker than any emotional safety that you desire. And I think it's a really toxic way to view it. I think that maybe in an ideal world where there wasn't trauma, I would go with the whole like, yeah, like we're blood. But at the end of the day, like someone's genetics don't make a relationship safe. They don't make a relationship good for someone. Oh. And I've seen so much pressure on people to reinstate relationships. I've had pressure on myself to reinstate relationships. I've had pressure on me with my no contact of like, what if they die? Like, what are you going to do then? And I'm like, I'm going to go to my therapist and like talk about it, but I'm not going to put myself in a situation that doesn't feel safe or doesn't feel aligned with my values simply to just like make something look and appear healed and more in line with like the nuclear family. Because even if it's appearing like that to other folks, there's obviously not actually healing there. And a lot of that is because a lot of the folks that we see that are abusers are also incredibly narcissistic. And so the pathway to admitting that they're wrong, the pathway to an apology and pathway to self-work is often non-existent. And I just, I would give advice to anyone listening that even if you don't understand no contact, don't ever encourage or pressure anybody to reinstate that relationship or tell them that it would be better if they did. Because I think the thing that people assume is that if you go no contact, it's not painful. And it's just like, oh, fuck my parents. Like, who cares? And that's really not the reality. It's very painful. And I know one of the things that I really struggled with was like, this is a person that is still alive that I love.
Yeah.
That I'm choosing not to see. And I understand that they don't understand that. And in their minds, they don't think they've done anything wrong. And so it doesn't make any sense to them. And I am now the villain to people that I love. And I have just had to sit in that ickiness and accept it and have that discomfort.
Yeah, I'm guessing that it's probably always been your job too, to like prevent them from feeling discomfort. So for you to have to sit in that and realize that like what you're doing is probably going to leave them with discomfort is so hard, because like that role that you've always played of like, I'm going to push away all of other people's emotions and make them okay, so then I can solve every problem and nothing bad ever happens and everyone is happy. Like finally, when you go no contact, you're like shedding that role, and it is so hard, like so uncomfortable for everybody. But I think it's so necessary too, because like you were never supposed to be doing that as a child.
Yeah. And it's not, I think the thing that a lot of people, it's not painless. And I think that there can be a disconnect and a lack of empathy with folks who go no contact, and there's an expectation that they're just doing it to be rebellious or they're just doing it to be a dick. And it's like, no, most of the time, this is someone's incredibly painful journey that they're trying to seek healing. And it's not an easy journey. It wasn't an easy decision often. Or if it was, it was a very painful decision. And it causes a lot of trauma and anxiety, and it's triggering and it's hard and it can be really difficult. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It means that oftentimes healing is like really icky and painful and gross. And I am someone that like has always really liked things to be tied up in a cute little bow and everything's really organized and my thoughts make sense and my feelings make sense. And in my personal experience with no contact, it's you're grieving people who are still alive. And that is a very weird experience. And it's very untidy and messy and weird. And you can't, it doesn't fit into boxes. It's not well organized and it's weird. And so if you ever, if you're experiencing that, like, we both understand you, we hear you, like, we relate to that. And if you're someone who like is trying to put any pressure on people to end that no contact, take a seat, because it's that's not the right way to approach it. And you're harming folks when you're telling them to reinstate relationships that they know are unhealthy for them. It's harmful. It's also not your fucking business. Like, that's the other thing. It's just like, stay in your lane. Like, don't tell other people what to do with their family relationships. It's weird.
I have two thoughts. I'm just saying that so that I remember them. The first one is just oftentimes when people are saying stuff like that, like, to, it's your mom, you only have one, you're going to be sad when she dies. Like, don't realize that no contact is the last of many attempts at a healthy relationship. Like, usually for people, going no contact with a parent is not like the first thing you try. It's not like, oh, my mom may be mad, so I'm never going to talk to her again. It's like, for me, at least for me, it was like going to therapy, getting diagnosed with PTSD, like trying to set boundaries, learning what that meant for myself. And then like when those attempts over and over and over again for like years of trying to set boundaries failed, I was like, oh, like they're not going to respect my boundaries. So in order to like respect myself, I need to enforce those boundaries and separate myself from them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then my second thought was something that I'm sure you've talked about at some point, just because I feel like ex-religious trauma kids talk about it. But when you're thinking about no contact, something that was really helpful with me, especially in therapy, talking it through with my therapist, she said, if you describe the way that your parents treated you as though they were like a romantic partner, or like if you describe that to a friend, they would absolutely tell you to break up with that person. Like, they would say, like, get the fuck out of there. You're not safe. So if you're thinking about going no contact with a parent or a guardian or authority figure of any kind, it could be really helpful to maybe write it down through the lens of a romantic partner, like the things they say to you, the way they treat you. And if that's not something you would tolerate from a romantic partner, it might be a good way to like reframe that of, it's okay to break up with someone, because they're not like someone that's non-blood related to you. So it's kind of easier to put it through that lens, because we don't often think about like quote breakups with family members.
Yeah. And you can break up with family members. And I think even if, I know that for a lot of people, their self-worth can be really low as well. And so maybe even framing it as like a friend, like a friend's boyfriend, because a lot of times I would put up with shit that if I saw someone doing that to my best friend, I would flip out. And so if I'm looking at something, that was one of the ways I got out of an abusive relationship, was like looking at like, okay, if I heard my best friend's boyfriend saying this to her, he'd get bitch slapped. But like my boyfriend saying it to me, and I'm like, I'm sorry. And I was like, huh, something is wrong. But yeah, no, I think that's great advice. And I want to end on, you have come out as queer, and I want to end on, happy pride. Yes, happy pride. We're recording this. Oh, we're recording this in June. It's actually going to be released in June. So woo woo. But you've come out as queer. You said your religious environment was not queer affirming. Has that been healing for you since coming out? And also, when did you come out in context with the no contact, the leaving religion? Like, where was the coming out process in that timeline? And was that really healing for you?
Yeah. So actually, I don't think I've ever like officially come out on the internet. And I think I've like mentioned being queer, or like used queer audios, or just like talked about relationships with women instead of men. And it's just been like, the vibe is that I'm clearly not a straight person. But I've also never come out to my parents. I'm assuming they know because of the stuff that I post online. Like, I think it's pretty obvious, they might not, but that wasn't ever like relevant in my decision to go no contact with them. I heard growing up from them that they would not be supportive of me being gay. Like, I know that would be the case. So it was something hard to grapple with, because I think you kind of have these big milestones, these ideas growing up of like your dad walking you down the aisle at your wedding, or like your mom in the delivery room with you having kids. And so being queer has kind of forced me to reframe those ideas, like even aside from my parents, like the idea of having a queer wedding or the idea of maybe having children in a non-traditional way, like maybe not biologically, has made me reframe those. And then also realizing that if I were in contact with my parents, like, would my dad walk me down the aisle at a gay wedding? Probably not. Would I want my parents to meet my future children in the state that we're currently in, which is like no acknowledgement of abuse and still like no progress in that relationship? No, I wouldn't. And it's really interesting to think about my future, being queer and how that relates to my relationship with my parents. I hope that made sense.
No, that makes total sense. Also, are you comfortable with this being included in the podcast if you haven't come out publicly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go. I've definitely like said it in live alluded streams and stuff. I'm like fine. Oh,
okay,
with
okay.
It. Yeah. I just don't like, I don't know, I don't feel a need to like, I don't know. I just, coming out has never been a huge deal for me because I think I realized I was queer after I went no contact with the abusive people in my life. So the people in my life now would never bat an eye if I brought home a woman, a man, a non-binary person, like to introduce them as my partner. Like that would never be an issue, so I never felt the need to like
make a full like Instagram post announcement,
just because yeah, like everybody in my life loves me for who I am, and that would never be something that would be like, yeah, I just don't think it's something that I would ever have to talk about because I'm lucky to be surrounded by such a wonderful like found family.
Yeah, also I don't know if you coined that term or if that's from someone else, but found family is a really great way of putting it. I really enjoy that.
To be honest, I probably saw it on TikTok.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's really cool to hear your story in total, and then also just to like see where you're at from. I remember the tube top video. Like I remember that coming on my For You page, and like
that's so cool.
You being so excited and like so nervous to buy it, and all the comments like affirming you, and also being like, "Hey, girl." Be safe.
Are you okay?
Yeah, but it's so cool to see like where you're at now. And you said you recently graduated college.
I did. Yes.
Was that this year?
Yeah, I did. I graduated in May. And I'm currently taking
congrats
a gap. Yeah. Slay. Never thought that would happen. I'm currently taking like a gap year to work and do research, and I'm going to try to get into a PhD program for clinical psychology. So that's where we're at right now.
Okay, did you get your degree in psychology?
Really, I did, yeah. I think that's what a lot awesome of religious trauma girlies do.
That's
yeah.
My bachelor's is in psychology as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep.
You're like, I can fix it. And
yeah, no, I got diagnosed with PTSD by my sociology professor. Like I was talking to him about my assault investigation, right. And he was like, "Have you ever heard of PTSD?" And I was like, "I'm not a veteran." And he was like, "That's not what PTSD is." And I was like, "Oh." And then he sat down with me and explained it and taught me like a few little breathing techniques, and that was like my first intro to like, "Huh, I should go to therapy and like get some help
with a professor." That's
yeah,
so
he's
cool.
He's dope. He's so cool. And it was in such a, he like literally gave me a book off of his shelf that was like his favorite trauma book and like handed it to me and was like, "This might be helpful for you." And I was like, "Oh, okay, aww, I can return it." And he was like, no, you keep it. Like keep it and read it and learn and heal." And I was like, "Oh, thanks." But yeah, he was lovely. But yeah, I think it's very common for the ex-Christian, ex-religious kiddos to pursue psychology. I think that is a very pretty solid pipeline. That or social work. It's a pretty yeah, like awesome. Well, do you want to plug and give anything you have going on, any places people can find you on social media and follow your journey?
Yeah, you can find me at HannahAha424 on TikTok and the same handle on Instagram. And I haven't posted in a good bit, but I'm like post-grad now, so I'm kind of just posting about everything I'm doing, like I don't know, so I'm just excited to connect with people there.
That makes me so happy. I'm so glad you're doing well. Like you popped up on my For You page a few months ago and I was like, "Oh my god, Hannah," and I like went through your whole profile and was like, "Oh my god, she's doing good. I'm so glad." Aww. She's doing good, because I think a lot of the internet like that was in that corner and saw your videos saw you as like everyone wanted to rally around you and make sure you were doing okay, because we all saw you going through the process and leaving, and everyone wanted to make sure that you were safe, even though it was just a whole bunch of random internet people seeing your journey. And
I felt that. I really did.
That's so good. And it makes me happy that not only are you safe, but like it's so cool to see how much you've been able to heal and that you're able to talk about it and help other folks. And it's so cool because I think your story is probably really, really common. And I really don't see a lot of people talk about it in the way that you speak about it. And I like I said, I've gotten so many DMs from people asking about no contact. I mean, like, it is one of the number one topics that I get asked about. And so I'm so glad that this will be like a forever internet resource that people can go to and hear. Yeah. And then they also have your page. And I know you have so many little tips and resources and explanations of your stories. And it's really interesting to see what you post as well. So if you guys don't follow Hannah, go give her a follow. And thank you so much for coming on. I wish you nothing but the best. I'm so excited to see where you get to go post college.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you and appreciate what you're doing with this podcast.
Thank you. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at Mindful Minds Pod and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And then you can follow me on TikTok, Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA, for all of my religious trauma and deconstruction content. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath. And remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I'll chat with you guys in 2 weeks.